All right, we're back on Bluegrass Bios. This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. Hap was out there in the hallway, and he was worried that maybe things went to blows in here at some point.
No, it was just passion.
It was passion. Stuart, he's perfect for radio, right? Because
I had to turn him down a little bit, but yeah, other than that, he was great for radio.
It was great point making. I thought they balanced each other out really well with sort of two different speaking styles and both kind of two different expertises.
Different disciplines.
I keep using that word. Is it expertises? All right. Well, if you know, you can call us in. Actually, don't call in because we're expecting Natalie Frank here in about 15 minutes. So, first of all, she's got a show at the Art Museum at the University of Kentucky. She uses the original tales of the Grimm brothers as subjects of her vivid paintings, combining complex images of beauty and grotesquerie. It's open right now. It's been open since the first week of May, and it will be open until July 31st. For more information on museum hours, you can go to finearts.uky.edu, or you can go see more about Natalie, her work at natalie-frank.com. Ben, while I bloviate, what's the word that they use when they're when you're like a congressman and you just keep talking?
Oh, you filibuster.
While I filibuster here for a second, why don't you go on and look at so that we can speak kind of more accurately about? They really are, and there are some haunting images, and. I know Natalie. She also has a book that she wants to talk about. One out now. And one that she's working on. So she is a painter, but her CV is like an arm's length. She's well educated in fine art. So we're gonna kind of get her story. I guess, is that how we're gonna do this? We're gonna figure out.
Yeah, we'll find out a little bit.
Okay, there we go. We're on the website there.
Let's look up works and see what we got here.
Well, these are very beautiful. I think she works with.
Is that oil?
They're oil based and is works it with good blues and lights and sort of light reds.
I know it's terrible radio to surf the internet while we're on, but
it is natalie-frank.com.
Right,
N-A-T-A-L-I-E.
Are we going to be okay coming on and asking her to describe her visual medium on a non-visual platform?
That'll be an interesting challenge. I say we give it a shot. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, with the singer, it was a little bit easier, right?
Because we could just say, "How do you sing?" And he would just sing.
Yeah, we just hit him with a cattle prod, and he just starts going.
It didn't even take a cattle prod. It just took like a pinky finger, and you just.
I had
it's
Lexington.
All you had to do.
No, I had Lexington prod him under the
man. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, the man loves to sing.
He does.
So you could.
Speaking of Lexington Sours, I have no. She's when I talked to her before the show, she said that she was out doing. She's doing a spot. I think she was getting B-roll of a playground out there. So got boots on the ground out there,
boots. They're getting her actually doing stuff as opposed to like just cleaning up the kitchen and taking out the trash and stuff. So she's out there getting B-roll.
Sure.
And I know what that means.
Yeah. So B-roll, ladies and gentlemen, for the non-initiated, let's say you're watching a news broadcast and they just have like an outside exterior shot of a building.
Yeah, yeah.
That's B-roll.
The kids playing in the park, as I imagine, which he's getting, or the B-roll is always, the obesity reports. They would have like all the shots.
A buffet?
Yeah. Buffets and people who are cut off at the neck so you can't see their faces, and then they show you large people to talk about their obesity reports. That's a B-roll.
That's a B-roll.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Everyone's seen that. okay, so I don't know that I quite fully got my answer to what the how the two work together from this is referring to the last interview, right? The hemp and the I guess I don't know what we're calling it because they rejected marijuana
cannabis I think
Well, no, but cannabis is the plant.
Okay.
So hemp is like the...
Oh, just sort hemp of is specifically that, what part of the plant is hemp and what part of the plant can
Well, no, they're two. Cultivated. They're two different... They're not even different strands. They're just like... You know, like you can have lilies, right?
Sure.
And you can have stargazer lilies. I know a lot about lilies. Oh, or you can have just like you know, whatever, just plain white. You know what I mean? Like they're not they're still the same plant, but they produce like a different thing. So through cultivation, that's how you get the buds that that you smoke versus, you know, when you look at you know, hemp, it still has the same distinctive leaves, but it's not statuesque like the psychoactive version of it is, right? Like you just sort of, it ends up being, it's pulpy and, you can use the, you reference the William Randolph Hearst part, which I thought I wanted to get into, which I think is interesting. This,
I think that had to do with paper production.
Exactly. Mostly. Because he was a media magnate. Right. I think he owned, a good portion. Let's wildly speculate at like, at least 60% of the newspapers in the country at the time. And we're talking, of course,
that's
about
feasible.
Like the,
yeah, that's a,
we're talking about like the 1890s, 1900s.
Late 1800s, like early 1900s. Yeah.
And obviously if you own the newspapers, you can run whatever you want. And there's not Google there to go in there and look up, what was it?
Really.
PubMed.gov to figure out what the scientific, if it's written, then it's truth. And that's just, we sort of take for granted that that's the way it was for a really long time. And I don't know if admire is the right word, but I can appreciate that, these guys, are going out there and, trying to undo, a century's worth of prohibition.
And it's a prohibition on research also. So that's, you know, what's really going to change people's minds is when we get some research and people can see some data. Maybe some of that data will come back negative. Maybe it'll come back positive. But we need that. We need the stuff that's on the .gov websites.
Are you going to buy CBD oil? You can buy.
I'm considering it.
Yeah,
I am considering that.
I'm not.
We'll see.
All right. What else do we have going on today? I really only wrote that Ali thing and just figured I'd phone the rest of it in.
You want to talk more about Muhammad Ali?
No, not really. This is a segment that I believe that we're calling I heard something interesting. Which I haven't. Have you? Are you? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
I have heard of something little interesting.
Just throw something out there.
I have heard that we are, or we should, stop using exfoliating microbeads in the face wash and the body wash and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. I can get into that.
Because they're getting in the water supply and we can't, we can't get them out.
Well, yeah. Kind of thing. It's sort of like, first of all, I don't know if you have a mouse in your pocket, but I don't recall one time I've ever used exfoliating. Is that part
I've
of your regimen?
I have on occasion. Yeah. That's just blotchy.
Is it like
skin?
Sand?
So. No, it's just kind of a light. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's maybe smaller than sand and it just gets into the pores and digs out dirt and grease and oil and stuff like that. And I am a notoriously oily skin person.
They have more and more studies coming out about how all this soap and shampoo is actually bad for you. It triggers that oiliness, right? Like, if I don't wash my hair, for a day, then it's like, you know, it's all greasy. You can kind of, see it from 10 feet away.
Yeah.
But, that is your body reacting to you stripping away all this Johnson & Johnson that you're naturally producing. And so now your body's overcompensating for that being stripped away. And so it produces a lot of it. But if you took like 2-3 weeks off, then it would rebalance.
Oh, interesting.
I would no longer like get so oily. It's another one of those, man. I just he was sort of, Stuart was talking about the salesmanship, right? Like, this will do this and this will do that. And I could probably spend, it would be worth it to spend the hours researching, what every, you know, I take that back. It would not be worth it to research every single supplement. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's the shelves at your local Kroger or your Full Circle Market or your GNC. Yeah. It's just, they're full of like all this stuff. Yeah. And it's like,
well, you know, more and more often I have physicians who are recommending, take calcium, try cranberry. And so this is what I'll do.
Vitamin D, man.
Vitamin D. Like,
whatever it is.
Vitamin, like, when I'm sick, I eat, swallow vitamin C like you wouldn't believe, just like a pill every 7 or 8 hours, just at least 3 a day. And that I've found to be very helpful.
I agree with the vitamin C.
Yeah. And some things are proven, and then some things, you know, you got a problem, give it a shot, you know. It's certainly cheaper than a pharmaceutical, and not as addictive, and you don't have...
But does it work? Does it do anything?
Sometimes it doesn't. And I'm out $6, you know?
Well, they're more expensive than that, a lot of them.
Well, a lot of them are. Not the stuff. I'm not going to pay like $30 or $40 for something that's over the counter. Don't pay a prescription price for something that's not a prescription. But you see so many, I'm just kind of tired of prescriptions and tired of having to go to the doctor and get a particular pill. If calcium and vitamin D,
if it
works
for
me, and yeah, it absolutely does. I make sure I take that at least once every other day, because that helps out some of my issues.
Have you ever been diagnosed with like fibromyalgia?
No. I just have nagging stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm not to the point of diagnosis.
Okay.
Just the little imperfections.
I mean, you're 40 years old, 41.
I'm 41. Yeah.
Is that just kind of a part of like?
Yeah, and also just kind of trying things. When you're young and you have discomfort and pain, you can kind of shrug it off for a good long time. You get into your late 30s and early 40s and stuff like that, and you just think, I'm just too tired. I'm too busy. I don't want to have to deal with a lot of this stuff. And if I can find something over the counter that's just like a vitamin and take that and feel better, then yeah, that's totally worth it.
Louis C.K. has got a great joke about how his knee was hurting, so he went to the doctor and said, he said, so what can you do? Well, you can do these stretches. You can stretch it out. He's like, well, how long will that take? He's like, no, that's just what you do now. Is that the phone?
That's the phone.
Hopefully. Okay. Can we go to music for a second, Ben? And then we'll come back with Natalie Frank.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to do that. We're going to be right back with artist Natalie Frank on Bluegrass Bios. This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio, and I apologize for that segment. All right. We're back. We've got Natalie Frank on the line. How are you doing today, Natalie?
Hi. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. First, I was wondering if you could tell us about the show that you've got going on at the Art Museum at UK.
Yes, it's been wonderful. I started a project about 4 years ago of the original 19th century unsanitized Brothers Grimm fairy tales, and did 75 large-scale gouache and chalk pastel drawings that became an exhibition, a portion of that, and then also a big color book with essays and interviews and other drawings. And so the show's been traveling. It began at the Drawing Center here in New York last spring and moved to the Blanton Museum at the University of Texas, Austin, and was organized by Veronica Roberts and with coordination of Amethyst Beaver, who is actually now living in Louisville working for the 21C hotels as an assistant curator, and then finally moved to the Art Museum in Lexington, and Stuart Herodner organized it there. And so it's really been a pleasure to watch it, you know, be able to have these iterations and lives all over, and really just thrilled to have it in Kentucky. So it's on its last stop and will be up, I think, through August.
Oh, this is the last stop?
Yes, it's the last stop, and then the drawings will go to their homes. And the book is available, of course, on Amazon and was distributed worldwide. So that has the complete set of drawings. But in each exhibition, there have been anywhere from 25 to about 35 of the 75 drawings.
5-star review on Amazon. And it actually it goes until July 31st. So for more information on museum hours, you can go to finearts.uky.edu or get more information about Natalie at natalie-frank.com. Natalie, what inspired you why were you so inspired by these Brothers Grimm tales that you wanted to do an entire collection inspired by them?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I didn't really, I think a lot of people know the real stories in the original 19th century versions of the tales.
They're dark.
I think we're all so acquainted with the Disneyfied versions of these stories, like Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella. But in reality, the original tales, for instance, in Cinderella, the evil stepsisters cut off their own toes to try to fit in the slipper, and in the end have their eyes pecked out by birds. So the original tales are quite different, and I was drawn to the kind of audacious sexuality, the violence, the really realistic representation of what life was like, especially for women in the 19th century, because all of these things happened. And I began to do research into the stories of an artist friend of mine, Paula Rego, who's worked a lot with fairy tales, who's a Portuguese artist who lives in London, suggested I look at the tales. And she's, you know, worked with fairy tales her whole life and said, I'm not going to get around to doing these, but you should. And so I remember coming home from her studio from London and getting back to New York and looking on Amazon. And the first book I saw was Jack Zipes, who's one of the major Grimm scholars and fairy tale scholars, translations of the Brothers Grimm, the third edition. And I ordered it and just started to read the stories and was so captivated. And the more I read about the fairy tales and their history, reading Maria Tatar and Marina Warner and also Jack, I learned that these were oral tales passed down through the centuries. And so many of them are iterations of other tales. Marina Warner especially traces the role of women throughout the fairy tales and talks about the history of these tales as a way that women especially could transmit and talk about their anxieties and fears and aspirations when the church and the state controlled so many aspects of their lives.
Oh, wow. So these are like allegorical kind of tales.
They're really, you know, oral tales that women told in the home around the hearth. And the Brothers Grimm were primarily philologists. So they were interested in language and putting together German dictionaries and encyclopedias. So they actually had a lot of these women come to them and wrote down the tales. And then the brothers changed a lot of the language for poetics. But the tales, and then eventually one of the brothers sanitized the tales to try to increase sales, which I thought was pretty funny. And so Jack Zipe, who I worked with, who let me use his translations and was sort of my guide through this and wrote the introduction to my book, he was actually the first to translate the unsanitized tales into English in the late 80s. So it's kind of staggering that these tales that have been around for so long, it's only been 20 years or so that we've had the original versions in English.
So I had never realized this before, although now when you talk about it starts to make sense. Maybe not feminist symbolism would not be the right way to put it, but just sort of the sort of oppressive symbolism in these fairy tales. That's interesting. Now,
That was a big point for me because I interpreted these tales through a feminist lens.
Sure.
But in the book that I put together, Linda Nochlin, who's, you know, the first considered first and most preeminent feminist art historian, wrote an essay about the Grimms, about the fairy tales, about the use of the fairy tale in art. And she really points out that these tales are a reflection of 19th century society. So all of the misogyny and class structure and gender relationships, all of that is very reflective of the time. There are errant sort of feminist, proto-feminist tales that most people aren't familiar with in this collection. But the majority of them do reinforce traditional patriarchy. So my take on it was very much subverting that. And I focused on the female characters, on the evil women, on the, you know, divine women, on really the range of roles that women can play.
First of all, we're talking to Natalie Frank. She's an artist. I've been calling you a painter, so I apologize for that. She actually works in pastel.
Thank you.
And paint. Okay.
Primarily oil painting up until this was my first body of drawing.
But the entirety of the collection is pastel.
It's gouache and chalk pastel. So you can call them paintings on paper, or they're drawings. Who knows what really what the difference is.
Well, they're beautiful is what they are. That's what I want to call them. Her show is at the Art Museum of the University of Kentucky. She's combined complex images of beauty and grotesquerie for drawings about the Grimm Brothers tales. Now, I'm looking at one right now, Natalie, that maybe you can... we were talking about this off-air, the challenge of having a visual description on a non-visual medium, but you've got a great, what's very obviously a Little Red Riding Hood drawing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could describe, I'll do my best here, you can maybe explain to me what the symbolism was here and what you were thinking. So there's a girl, she's kind of, she looks sort of shocked. She's staring off to the audience's right, and coming out of the right side of her face is a screaming kind of ghastly wolf figure. Do I have that about mm-hmm. right? That is Little Red Riding Hood, correct?
No, it's actually it's not fur. It's all fur. Little Red Riding Hood, I did draw, and there are three drawings or four drawings in that series, but that's all fur, which is one of two stories in the collection that deal with incest. So it has a bit of a Cinderella story to it because a father wants to marry his daughter, and she goes into hiding and has to wear a cloak of every animal in the kingdom and becomes a chambermaid. So that's a portrait of her as she's in hiding. But it's, a beautiful woman who is what we think of as a traditional heroine, but has been marred by this experience. And so she's a lot of the women in the tales shapeshift in between animals and humans. And so I wanted her sort of becoming this animal. So this wolf, which is really, you know, one of the animals on her coat that she wears, is blending very much into her face. And the pastel is kind of bridging the two images in a way. But the paper is such, it's a very rough watercolor paper that you can see the texture. So the chalk actually gets caught on the paper texture with it, which I think gives it a grittiness, which for me mirrors the kind of brutality in the stories. And I used a lot of very bright, vivid colors and areas I tried to make very attractive and kind of beautifully rendered, mixed with these very jarring images. So even though the woman is a beautiful blonde who's someone I know because all the figures are people that I photograph and know, there's that element I wanted to tease out of the kind of wild or damaged part of her.
The eyes are excellent, I have to say. I know the audience. Go out there and Google Natalie Frank. That's what I did, and it's in the top seven lines. You'll be able to see exactly what we're talking about. Natalie, I was wondering if maybe you could also tell us a little bit about your background in art. Obviously, aside from your work with pastels and paint, and you just said photography, also clearly an art historian. How did you get involved in this career path, I guess, for lack of a better phrase?
Well, I was very young when I started drawing from life, and I have a very supportive family who I think recognized my interest and kind of talent at a young age, and was very supportive of sending me to different schools to study and, you know, allowing me the time to work on my own. And, you know, every day in high school and college, I had a studio. In high school in my mother's office building, in college, I had a wonderful head of my residential college who gave me a studio and money to go study and paint. And so it's just always been a very focused interest and passion and ambition of mine. And I started life drawing, like I said, when I was about 12, 13, and then studied at the Slade and the École des Beaux-Arts and different places, and did my undergraduate at Yale, where I studied art but focused on every art history and economics and literature, which is a place I gather a lot of inspiration. And did my MFA at Columbia, and before that did a Fulbright in Oslo, Norway. So I studied at the Statens Kunstakademi for a year and was there to look at Edvard Munch especially, and was really just painting on my own. And so it's been, you know, it's such a luxury when you can make your life out of your passion. So it's been, I think, a lot of supportive people along the way, and just a very strong ambition of mine and focus. And so, yeah, it's wonderful when you have opportunities, you know, to show the work and have people interact with it. That's really, I guess, the whole point.
Natalie, do you use any of your art history background to inform some of the work that you produce?
Absolutely. I'm always thinking of, you know, Weimar artists and the Surrealists and Velázquez and Manet, and those artists are so important to me. And I think through traveling, that's been such a significant part of seeing the world, seeing different cultures through their art. And so that's always kind of on my mind. And I think a lot of artists feel like you're constantly in a conversation with other paintings and artists, even if they're not alive, that are always kind of hovering at the edges of your work.
Do you use their techniques to inspire you, or a subject matter, or what is it about? What is it about some of your favorite artists that kind of draws to you and draws you to them, yeah, and inspires your work?
I think it's things you admire. It's things you want to, like I think Picasso said, you know, you steal. It's a combination of taking things from all over and then recombining them in a way that makes them your own. Mm-hmm. I don't want to copy artists' styles or copy their subject matter, because I very much want to have my own point of view. But you have to begin with something. So,
do you let it kind of inspire you on a subconscious level, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything you see and do and people you meet and places you go, it's always there with you.
Sure. I mean, that's why many of the people are those that you've met in real life, right? Like, there's a David Foster Wallace quote that I love, that at least that maybe he's using from someone else, that books are made out of other books. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting that you use the phrase, it's a conversation that you're having visually. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
She's Natalie Frank. She's a artist out of New York. She's got a show, The Grimm Brothers, is it The Brothers Grimm? It's Brothers Grimm.
The Brothers Grimm.
Brothers Grimm.
Yeah.
It's showing until July 31st at the Art Museum of the University of Kentucky. For more information on museum hours, you can go to finearts.uky.edu. If you want to find out more about Natalie and her work, you can go to natalie-frank.com. If you want to check out her book, it's on amazon.com. That book's name is Tales of the Brothers Grimm. 5 stars on Amazon right now. You were telling me earlier, though, that you have another book in the works. Can you tell us about that?
I do. Princeton Press is publishing it. It's Jack Zipes' book. He follows the tale type of the Sorcerer's Apprentice from very early on up till the present, and through multiple languages, through many poems and stories that have never been translated before. And I think the book will be about 600 pages. And I'm doing the black and white drawings for the interior and then the cover. And he's just such a pleasure to work with and such a brilliant, brilliant man that it's just a fantastic opportunity to work with him again.
Now, do you bounce around from one medium to another, or you know, is it sort of like you know, with comedians, right? They'll mm-hmm. they'll perfect a routine and then they'll get rid of it, right? They've already got that mastered. Do you keep experimenting with new visual mediums or media?
Yeah, I mean, I work in between drawing these gouache and chalk pastel and big oil paintings, and also paper, handmade paper. I make paper and paint with paper, and I'm working on some other projects in three dimensions now. So it's, you know, I guess you never hope that you're repeating yourself or you're perfecting a routine, because it should be constantly new and engaging and challenging, everything you're working on. So maybe part of going from media to media is that resistance, which can bring things out in your work that you might not suspect and kind of keep you on your toes. So that's really important for me. I, you know, you want to be challenged and engaged when you're working.
What's the most time you've ever spent on a piece?
I mean, I don't know. You know, it's hard when you're not swiping a time card. It's.
I mean, are we talking about a month?
Quickly.
A week?
Oh, I mean, the drawings were a couple of days a piece.
Okay.
I prefer to work quickly, and I think that helps maintain some spontaneity in the work. So it all depends on, you know, if it's a 20-foot oil painting, sure, it'll obviously be a bit more involved than a drawing.
Sure.
So Natalie, if there's somebody listening who's thought to themselves, gee, I'd like to paint, what's the mm-hmm. first thing they should do? Or what was the first thing you did when you were a kid, when you decided
that's
you wanted to paint something?
That's a great question. That's a really wonderful question. I met a young girl who came to the opening of the show with her father, and she really wanted to be an artist. And, you know, I said, you've got to pursue it. You've got to be serious about it. You've got to take time to allow yourself to develop. I think finding people who can be supportive in whatever way that is, whether it's teachers or family or curators or whoever, is a really important part. But just kind of listening to yourself and, you know, developing your voice, I think that's the most important thing, and having discipline, because it takes it's a lot of work and a lot of time alone. So, and that's not for everyone. And it can be difficult, but it's incredibly rewarding.
Yes, you have to be very good company for yourself if you want to be an artist. Well, let's say there's somebody young or old who just does not have that kind of support. They're in the school that maybe lacks mm-hmm. an arts program. Their parents mm-hmm. aren't really keen on them mm-hmm. falling in love with it and becoming a professional artist.
Right.
Where can you find sort of that support within yourself? What are like some things you can do and say to yourself?
Like early on, I mean, one is if you can go to museums or libraries and look at books and travel and look at art, talk to people about art. There's a scholarship out of Canada that I won twice. That's an amazing program called the Elizabeth Greenshield Foundation, and they support figurative art, and it's sometimes can be more difficult for figurative artists, depending on if it's in or out of style. And they're just incredible. It's a very short application. You send in, you know, 12 images, and they mail you a check, and there are no strings attached. And so there are quite a few grants like that that, for me, helped me. You know, with that money, I went all over Europe for a summer and bought supplies. And I think if you're industrious, and they're nonprofits that show work. There are all sorts of arts organizations you can be a part of or engage with that don't require, you know, extreme amounts of money or mm-hmm. time or, you know, so I think there's just always a way to do it. And a lot of art schools offer great scholarships too, so.
And you mentioned doing a book cover, so I imagine somebody knows somebody who needs a book cover or an album cover or promotion of some sort. And so the museum is what I took away from your advice, because that's much different than Googling a painter or even a book. Going to the museum, right. Seeing the actual painting, seeing the brush strokes,
right.
Seeing it in person and stuff like that.
Right.
Do you remember the first time you went to a museum or an art museum and saw a show like that?
I do. I mean, my family brought me to New York once a year, and I remember being just enthralled by the Met, and I saw Katja Kollwitz for the first time there, and so many, you know, especially in New York, there's so many wonderful institutions that you can pay what you want or go on free days or hours, and you have exposure to such a wide range of history and art history.
Now, I wanted to bring it back to the Brothers Grimm a little bit, since that's what your show is about. Do you have I have a two-part question. Do you have a favorite Brothers Grimm fairy tale, and do you have a tale that hardly anybody knows about that you particularly enjoy?
It may be the same answer to both. There's a story called The Ungrateful Son, which was actually my favorite drawing of the group as well. And it's a short tale. No one knows it. It's about a paragraph long.
Oh.
And it's about a son who I sort of made into a daughter who doesn't appreciate their father and doesn't feed them properly. And so is cursed to live with a toad on his head. And if he doesn't feed the toad like he didn't feed his father, it eats his face.
Oh,
so I
love
that idea of, like, a person being cursed with this animal who becomes a part of their body, and they have to figure out how to live with them.
Oh,
because
that's
they were naughty.
Yeah, almost parasitic in that kind of
I don't know how you turn that into a Pixar movie. We've got
the toad would have to be very friendly looking.
You're right. Yeah.
And voiced by
Ellen.
Disney has not done good things for the Grimms, so let's not make another Disney movie for the Brothers Grimm.
Natalie, thank you for coming on and talking with us today.
Thank you.
I do have one more question.
It's a pleasure.
Sure. Okay, so this just kind of occurred to me because you were talking about going to museums. Have you ever seen a Rothko? Can you explain to me what the allure is of that guy and his stuff?
Okay, so think about a moment, close your eyes, that you felt some sense of transcendence or peace or tranquility or levitation. Has that ever happened?
Certainly.
Okay, that's for me, and I think maybe some other people, when you look at a Rothko, the lines between what is abstract and what is real, what is reality, what is transcendence, what is space, what is color, what's paint, what's form, everything becomes blurred, and it's a pretty exciting experience.
One that you can't replicate on Google Images, right?
Exactly. Okay. I mean, you can go out and look at a sunset, and maybe that's the closest you'll get to a Rothko.
That's a really good... Okay. Huh. That's cool. All right. Well, that's a really great way to go out, Natalie. Thank you again. She's Natalie Frank. She's an artist. She's got a show at the Art Museum at the University of Kentucky. It's the Brothers Grimm, and their subjects are vivid paintings combining complex images of beauty and grotesquerie. It's open now until the 31st. For more information, go to finearts.uky.edu. Or to learn more about Natalie, go to natalie-frank.com. Thanks again, Natalie.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, this is Bluegrass Bios. We're on WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. And speaking of Lexington, Ben, when we come back, we have one more caller. Our boots on the ground in McLean County, Kentucky. it's Lexington Sours, so stay tuned. She's going to do a check-in with us.
Great.
All right, we're back on Bluegrass Bios. This is WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. Ben, the show's really sailed by today, don't you think?
I think it has, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think it is there's like a little bit more, there's like elbow room in here or something. I don't know. It's been...
It's not as warm.
You know what? I'm just kidding. Figurative,
emotionally and literally.
No, I am way hurt that we still have to talk to Lexington Sours over the phone. How are you doing, Lex?
You there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, okay, what's cool. going on?
I'm doing well. I'm just working away over here. How are y'all?
We're good. We had a good show today. We talked about weed and and
cannabinoids and fairy tales and paint and
is your kind of show.
I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about you saying that was my kind of show, but
well, it was a farm. It was farming based.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't like
more hemp based.
Yeah, we weren't talking about, it wasn't that time that, well, never mind. The audience isn't there. Tell us what's going on over there in McLean County, Lex.
You know, nothing is really going on in McLean County. It's a very,
hard to believe.
Right? I know. It's a very small community, very small county. So, just going to some city council meetings. We're putting in a new playground today.
Putting in a playground.
Yes.
So, like, you have a shovel?
Well, I did none of this. I took pictures.
Oh, okay.
Now, did you take pictures or video?
Pictures.
Pictures. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, in McLean County, we're not really...
They don't have video yet?
We're very print-based.
Okay. I see. So, what is your... is everybody being nice to you there?
Yes, everyone is being nice to me. It's been a great learning experience so far. Just been really interesting getting to know the town. Today I made it there and back without getting lost.
Oh, wow. Okay. There's a victory.
Which, yeah, well, for me it is.
Where are you staying?
I'm staying in Owensboro at a local college.
Okay.
So I have this very, very old but endearing house. That it's just me, which gets a little creepy.
I was going to ask, yeah.
So, but, I mean, it's been a good experience. I've never really lived on my own before.
Well, through college, you were in the sorority house mostly
yes,
in dorm.
Yes, I was.
Okay, well, so wait, you've never lived on your own. Does that mean it's just like pizza boxes or like where are you? What are you doing?
Yes, are you eating properly, Lexington, or are you just fast food?
No, I'm eating. I'm only allowed to work 40 hours a week, which is really weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the features editor, man. How many hours? You're doing double that for the last 4 months, right?
Well, not necessarily double, but just very different hours. You know, going to class, coming in from class, working, you know, balancing a bunch of different things, and here my only job is to write stories and to report. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's like your dream come true, right?
Right, right.
Now, did they have you doing this right out of the gate, or did you have to like do some dishes and take out the trash first?
No, I even offered to get people coffee one day, and they couldn't make me do that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I've been writing since day one, and that's been really great. I've been here a week now, so.
What's the nightlife like over there in McLean? Yeah. Is it just, I'm imagining one bar and it's
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you go to the bar?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about McLean County, but here in Owensboro, which is in Davies County, it's just a county over, it's where our paper hub is, basically, where our parent company is. They have this really cool thing on Fridays called Fridays After Five, and there's free music. And so that's been fun to kind of go and hang out. But
so you're staying entertained.
I am staying entertained. Definitely not Lexington by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
No peach tree dances or square dances yet?
No Thursday Night Live.
I did learn a line dance.
Did you really?
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All
yes.
right. So I guess if we can sum this up, then 1 week in, we're doing just fine over there in McLean. Is that right?
Yes. We are doing just fine here in McLean County. And and more adventures for the summer. Got lots of exciting stories planned and got lots of exciting events that I'm looking forward to covering.
All right, good. Well, we've got a homework assignment for you. We're gonna bring you back on in 2 weeks, and okay. I want a story where you almost got in trouble but did not quite. All right, so go out there and have fun this summer. All right, Lex.
All right.
We'll tell Jenny not to tune in for that one.
Okay, good. That's good.
Good talking to you, Lex. Okay.
Thanks, Lex.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye. Okay. Good show, Ben.
Yeah, it was fun. I had fun today.
That was a good idea, bringing in the Muhammad Ali sound. This is a kind of conversation maybe we should have off the air. But all right, fantastic. We'll be back next Tuesday. Same bad time, same bad station.
What station is that, Carl?
That is 95.7 WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, your spot for Latin music and two white guys in a room. So until next week, we are Bluegrass Bios. For Lex and Ben, I am Kyle. We'll see you next week, Lexington.